Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston, how are you, my man?
I'm doing pretty good.
Oh, good. I'm doing tired.
Yeah, a little
played 36 today. It's the first time I played 36 in one day in a while. So
that's a lot of golf. Yeah, I mean, that would tire me out.
Yeah, it was fun though. It's good.
We're a bunch of old men, so it's okay to be tired after 36.
Yeah, it's all right. But yeah, let's jump into it. U.S. Open. Wyndham Clark wins the U.S. Open, even though you say he holds on. in the final groups, yes, it's subjective.
It is subjective. I mean, there was a couple clutch holes, but I felt that way. I think that's a legit way to define his victory. He held on. I mean, he had to make that two putt at the end. It wasn't like a walk in the park.
And no.
Two putting from 40 plus feet on U.S. Open greens. No thanks.
Yeah. I think they said it was 60 feet. It was a long putt.
It was long. Maybe it was longer, but still pretty awesome. I mean,
yeah,
he was the best golfer by far, and even on the final day. And he did hit some clutch iron shots. He made some clutch saves and did what he needed to do on the last hole, which was pretty crazy.
Wedge work was pretty amazing.
Yeah, his wedge work, and we'll talk about his wedge and what makes it special. But he put it all together, which was needed. He needed to shoot even to win because nobody else could shoot under in the final two groups. Well, maybe they did, but
I don't think so. I think you're right.
Because Scheffler shot even, Rory shot even, Wyndham shot even, and Fowler shot plus five.
Plus five.
Nobody in the final two groups shot under par, and that's all Rory needed to do. One birdie, well, not just one birdie, but shoot one under, and he was in a playoff, which a guy of that caliber, you'd think, could have accomplished that on the final day. So he didn't necessarily just fold like a cheap suit the way Ricky did, but he didn't do anything either. So that's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, there's a few guys out there that did that, because I was just looking at it. DJ shoots a couple over. Xander Schauffele shoots a couple over. And they were both in those final four or five groups. Right. Harris English. So it's like, yeah, it got significantly tougher in the afternoon for those guys.
Oh, totally. How would you grade the U.S. Open? If you thought about the tournament as a whole and what the USGA did to preserve the essence of the U.S. Open, what grade would you give this?
Grade? Or rating? B, probably. B.
A B?
A B.
That's probably pretty friendly. I want to say C+, and maybe it's just because I overweigh the first day. Like, to me, the first day was like D+. on setup and the scores that were put out there. And then I felt like day two was definitely more US Open-ish, but it never felt like US Open until the final two groups of the tournament on day four. Because there was a lot of low scores out there. Even on the final day, I mean, check this out. Cameron Smith, 67. Tommy Fleetwood, 63. Minwoo Lee, 67. Tom Kim, 69, which was at least under par. But Austin Eckroat, 65. John Rahm, 65. It's, I mean, there were some numbers. And granted, they teed off maybe a little bit earlier. But there was still some really solid numbers on day four. So, like, yeah, I just didn't feel like it was US Open-y until the last two groups on the final day around the back nine.
And I think what led to that a little bit is I think the fairways actually did what they're a little bit better. That, I mean, there was some run out in the fairways, but nothing like overly crazy.
Yeah.
I would say they were wide, significantly wider than most US Opens, but they didn't get as crusty for the greens. And some of that, I mean, maybe it'd be minus, and some of that was because of everything that was talked about after the atmosphere was not nearly as US Open-y either.
Yeah.
And that comes down to a couple of things.
Yeah, I heard that feedback throughout the week that this particular course was not very spectator friendly.
Yes. But I think the US Open, I think, was so, the USGA so wanted a US Open at LACC, they let LACC dictate a lot of what was going on, right?
Yeah.
So when I was reading some things on it, they limited the number of tickets that could be sold. Of those tickets, a large portion of them were hospitality
yeah.
tickets. And then of the rest that were left over, I did hear that like LACC members bought like half of those.
That's,
but not to use. I think they just bought them.
Oh, that's weird.
So, and then I guess around the first tee, because it's how close it was to the clubhouse, no one could be in that area. So you didn't have like that opening tee feeling, which I'm trying to remember. I didn't watch a lot of opening tee shots, but thinking back on it now, it's probably correct. It wasn't nearly that, you know, the ambiance and atmosphere of a normal US Open.
Yeah.
The course itself was different. Like I said, I think if they would have baked the greens a little bit more, I think it could have got a little bit more interesting. Right. Even if they kept the fairways where they were, because the rough in spots was long. There was a lot of guys complaining that about blind tee shots, which blind tee shots and, you know, them running off. Even when you hit it down this fairway, it ends up in the rough. And I'm like, yeah, but you get my thought on that was, is like, okay, yeah, but you get that a lot in regular US Opens, but it's because everything is a freaking racetrack, and so it just runs through. So I don't know. It wasn't my favorite US Open, no doubt, but I think the course showed what it was going to be. And in my opinion, the USGA went a little soft on it.
Yeah.
With their setup. But oh, it was good.
Yeah. I mean, it was still a fun tournament to watch. I love seeing Ricky in the hunt just for Ricky's sake. And then, yeah, I felt like it was pretty well rounded in the leaderboard. There was a lot of people. And as much as I have not liked Rory lately, I still would have liked to see him actually do something.
And he just, they kept showing it. And he never really kind of had that. Cause he has the one birdie and everybody's like, oh no, here it goes. Right. On number one, he has lone birdie of the day on number one. And then he bogeys 14, which that one I still question his drop on that. Did you see, you saw that, right? Where he plugged into the side of a bunker. So he hits
it broke the surface of the ground and was considered an embedded ball.
Yeah. But then the drop, I'm like, it wasn't that far there where he would have, I don't know. I think that was mishandled. But with how those were, he's hitting a wedge in there. There's zero chance that thing broke ground.
Yeah.
Those bunkers were like that. Like if you hit them at that angle, there was a chance that they weren't coming out. That's
what they were designed for, the way the grass was grown and everything. So,
but yeah, he still made bogey because, you know, he doesn't know how to putt on Sundays. But it's the same thing, right? He hits, he's pretty good from tee to green. But I don't even think they're like the to the green portion of it. He doesn't really give himself great opportunities. I think a couple of them maybe, but no great opportunities to even there. So it didn't look like he was ever a real threat. It was just whether Wyndham was going to come back to him enough to get it there. But Wyndham stepped up. I mean, makes two under through six, makes a bogey on eight, and then makes some really good pars on a couple of those holes on the backside, which the backside was significantly tougher than the front side all week. And then hits it just a crazy good shot on 14 to get up in that little neck to give him an eagle putt when no one else had been getting it up and in that. And then he makes a really bad bogey on 15. Which that par three was pretty fun to watch. Maybe funner than the long ones.
It was.
And then bogey 16.
Yeah.
But then makes a really good up and down on 17. And then the just a great putt when you're trying to win the US Open and you just lag it to kick in range from 60 feet.
Yeah. Yeah, that bogey surprised me on that par three.
Yeah.
Not to convert that up and down for as good as he'd been around the wedge of the green.
Green.
And so that was just a real slip up, but he held on.
You got it done. He's a U.S. Open champion. So,
Bingo.
go. But yeah,
But
like I
more
said,
importantly, though, the great
yeah,
bet,
yes.
our pick, who actually won, who was the victor?
Would be me. I will be
Yeah.
getting a drink if we can get together before the Open Championship and it ends up leveling again. Yes, but we picked our dark horses were turd horses.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
They were not good. Both missed the cut. Like, not. I mean, the cut was at two over, so they missed it by two. It's not like they missed it by seven.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, we had Justin Rose for me and Max Homa both end up at four over, missing the cut. But my guy Scheffler comes through, gets
He
another top five. Just like
with a new
he
putter, no
didn't
less.
it. No, I don't think he didn't.
At least one of the days
Did he
he had,
switch
I
in the
saw
mid
it.
round?
Maybe he did. I don't know, but he did play the new Scotty Cameron.
Okay, because they were talking about it on day one and they didn't think he had switched. But that wasn't confirmed. He may have. But I still don't think he putted very well. Like he missed some putts that, yeah, it may have been a little bit better, but he just hits the ball so good from tee to green, he gives himself opportunities.
Yeah.
But he gave me the opportunity to win a soda, and I appreciate that.
It's
So that's good. And then more PGA PIF. I guess we can call it PIF because it's not really a live. Lives involved in it, but it's more PGA Tour PIF
yeah.
chatter.
Ugh.
And I'm gonna let you, like I said, I spoke my piece to you on Tom Watson. I think he was just an old guy that wanted to say something because he feels like his voice has to be heard. But I don't know. His open letter. Questions that everybody's had and that I feel like everybody's asked. He just wanted to write them down. You have different thoughts on it.
Well, yeah, I felt like he was voicing a lot of questions that people had asked, but maybe not so openly.
Yeah, maybe.
And there's some assumptions in that letter about which I think are the biggest tells, which are, was there financial instability with the tour
Yes.
that caused this? Because there was a competing
Yes.
product out there. And was that causing, financial losses? So there was a lot of that going on, and a lot of questions, and people kind of begged it, but never really just asked it the way Tom Watson did. And so, in absolute savage fashion, though, Jay Monahan announces all this merger, and then just disappears for medical leave. I guess if
Yeah.
you can't get fired if you don't show up to work.
Maybe. So what is like I kept hearing something and then more convinced now than ever that Rory is a complete puppet and getting paid for his opinions. his opinions, and not anyone else's opinions, with a presser that he did, or just an interview. It wasn't even a presser, just somebody got him, and he likes to talk to, you know, anyone who will stick a microphone in his mouth. But yeah, so like I said, he suffered a medical emergency. What was it? Or medical situation. So.
Yeah, medical leave.
Yeah, they said it's, and that's even like fishy, right? It's a medical situation.
What it is what's great about medical things is that you're not obligated to tell anybody anything, because that's a private matter. My health is a private matter.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough, right? But to orchestrate such an absence after such a significant situation, yes. I'm just saying.
It's fishy for sure. And obviously, I don't think anybody like wishes ill will on him. Hopefully it is some kind of medical situation that he needs to, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
There, maybe he's taking, you know. Well, no, he wouldn't be taking knives out of his back. That'd be the PGA Tour players.
It's all right. I mean, maybe it's just really bad timing on his part. Maybe he is dealing with some medical situation and it just doesn't look good. The appearance, you know, benefit of the doubt, right? Yeah. But hey, we don't know until we know.
Yeah, but stepped away. He's like, everybody else can handle all the questions. My guess is his medical situation was he had a freaking nervous breakdown because he was getting it handed to him. And he's like, oh boy.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm going to take my ball and go home situation.
That's funny. Yeah, that he'd been in front of the TV more in the last year than he had his entire tenure.
Yeah. Yep. So hopefully you're doing well, Jay. Hopefully you can get back so that you can answer your questions.
Get voted out.
So that Jimmy Dunn doesn't have to answer them all. Yeah, like I said, we discussed that as well in the episode when the news first broke.
Yeah.
That, and he, I guess if this proposed alliance or whatever they're calling it, proposed merger, proposed deal, if it goes through, can he get voted out? I guess as he can get voted out as PGA Tour commissioner.
Yep.
But then he would still be CEO.
of the new
for-profit.
Yeah. Arm. So it's super sus.
But yeah, it's not good timing. You would have had a thought of that, right? Where, I don't know. I guess if it's something that just popped up, you can't do much about that. So, but wishing him a speedy recovery so we can get some answers. Tom Watson needs answers. But my guess is some of these guys can go to Jimmy Dunn and have him answer the questions. He seems to know a lot of the details, seeing how he was a big proponent in working the deal, or part of the pieces that were
putting
the deal together. So
certainly played a pretty big part taking credit for, I think, for orchestrating the darn thing. Yeah.
Yep. So, other than that, now we'll get into equipment.
Yeah, some new stuff's been popping up just after the U.S. Open. I mean, last week, Titleist had introduced their new T100 line of golf clubs. So in competitive fashion, we have another company releasing their irons. We've got Callaway, who has, I don't know if it was leaked or if they were spotted or anticipated, but the Callaway Apex CB and MB images have surfaced. And it's a personal opinion, it's not pretty.
No. Well, I was looking at it. I was just looking at scrolling through Instagram while we were getting ready to record. And that popped up while we were just discussing some things. And yeah, it was a miss on both. Whatever they did, not good.
I'm giving them a little bit of slack on the CB. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. A couple people have messaged me and they're like, oh, that's like an AP2. That's what that is.
Yeah.
Or, so it's nothing unique to its design by any means, but to me, the blade was an absolute miss in comparison to what they've done in the past. They had that Mira forged Callaway that was so pure that Molinari played. Then they did the Apex MB with the screw in the back. Those to me were like one of the best blades Callaway ever put out. I thought those were gorgeous. And then to go from that to this, where it looks like it's a love child between the Apex Pro weight plate and a bead blasted, you know, blueprint ping. It was just kind of like kind of a miss, yeah. A blade, yeah. Perspective, you know.
I think maybe it looks better in real life, but
maybe. Not.
Probably so. Not. But yeah, they do not catch my eye. Like when I originally saw the post, I was like, this is a joke, right?
Yep.
This is mid. Somebody was sandblasting an iron just so that they could, and well, I don't know. Yeah, it's not a good look. Maybe their performance is there. Who knows? It's the only thing you can hope for, right? Is that their performance is good, because the look is not.
No. So. No, it's bueno. But yeah, something else got leaked too. TaylorMade Reserve Putter. That is new. I think I have an image to show you, but basically it is TaylorMade's entrance into the milled putter game, to be honest. Like competitive high-end stuff. Also, I sent over an image, but very familiar shape, this particular putter. And they're doing some similar stuff. I would have preferred a different execution, but fully milled. It's got it actually has grooves milled into the face that it's almost like they replicated the groove technology of their inserts and milled that into the face of the putter. And then on the backside, it's one of the things that putter makers in the CNC space have been doing to maybe differentiate their product is to add texture through milling. Like, it's very deliberate milling, but it's not clean. It's like high speed, low spin, and you're going to get striations along the back edge or trailing edge. And Scotty did that on some of his tour type putters, and that gained some popularity. This thing is just chock full of it. It's like all over the place. To me, it's a little overdone in regards to texture,
Right.
but it's what they wanted. But I'd say, kudos to them for finally entering the premium space of putters. There's, obviously Scotty's been there and has established himself. Callaway really was on the low to mid market range with their Odyssey line, and then they brought Toulon in to run up their high end space. And TaylorMade
Right.
was very competitive in the Odyssey arena with their spiders and things like that. But now they're actually producing a putter that's in that high end milled arena. So we'll see how it does. But what I
It'll
can say,
be okay, is my
it'll be
guess.
okay.
It'll be okay.
It'll be okay. Here is some there. So TaylorMade did make a putter for Tiger Woods that he used. It was a black putter, had a red insert, and this putter actually, to my eyes, looks identical in shape. So pretty cool.
That and now we get into the winner's bag.
Oh yes.
Winner's bag.
What's in the bag? Yeah, I think there's a couple highlights here. Titleist TSI 3 driver, which he hit, Wyndham Clark hit incredibly well. He does have a stealth 2-3 wood at 15 degrees, which that worked for him. And then he did the 3 iron in the T200. And no 5 wood, no hybrid, just 3 iron. And that is a rocket 3 iron, by the way. I've seen some players play this T200, and it just goes. And it goes so much that I want one. And so,
Would be a good
but
pickup. I did.
yeah.
I've got a ZX5 driving iron, and it was in play a lot today.
Yeah.
So.
And then the Titleist 620 CBs, which I think are the most underappreciated iron in the Titleist
They don't get
lineup.
a lot of
He
love. You right, they just get sandwiched right in between the MBs and the T100s,
Yep.
and they just
Totally.
they're the forgotten middle child for sure.
Oh, absolutely. But he rocks those, and he's got a hybrid shaft and a 3 iron, and then Dynamic Gold X7, my
Which
friends.
are those are
X7.
boardy shafts.
Yeah, they're heavy. They're beefy.
Yes.
But the wedges is where things really get cool. He has a pretty typical setup in the front end. He's got Titleist Vokey SM9s, 46 F grind, 52 F grind, 56 S grind. And then the Vokey Design Wedgeworks 60 A
A
grind,
grind. This
which
is
is like,
the second time this has popped up. And you know what? It was probably the first time it if I'm remembering, he did just swim like a month ago.
yeah, he might
So,
have been the first time as well.
yeah.
But the A grind, quick history, that's a Jeff Ogilvie and Aaron Dill
Yep.
collaboration. A standing for Australian. And it was meant for hard, firm courses where you needed to get your wedge to get, slip under the ball and get it airborne when you're in these firm conditions. So, but what was cool about this wedge is he added a pre-worn leading edge. And it, to me, like sang to me because now you've got this super flat wedge, but a little bit more forgiveness in the leading edge for your full swing, and maybe even, bump and runs around the green if you're gonna put it back in your stance. I like fell in love the second I saw that grind. And then yeah, I want it. Let's put it that way.
And then his putter, which ironically He beat Ricky to win the U.S. Open with Ricky's putter.
I know. The Odyssey Jailbird versus he played with Ricky, and that day Ricky was making everything, and he's like, hey, Kelly, can you make me a putter like Ricky's? I mean, like, exactly like Ricky's.
I want.
They did.
Yeah, they did, and it works. I think he just changed the lie loft just to match his, but it's the same putter.
It's pretty impressive. And it works. I mean, I wouldn't say it's on my list of must gets, but apparently all the people that ever owned one decided to pull them out of their garage and put them on eBay.
I saw a post. And from he does a lot of on Instagram, but he does a lot of like golf photography. But he was just making fun of guys that are like, yeah, and just go pay $500 for an $80 putter and that'll solve all your problems.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was hilarious to see all those eBay, and they were really marking it up. Now, one thing I would do is I would not go buy an Odyssey Versa. But if I had one in my garage, I would definitely flip it for $500.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, people are dumb enough to pay it. They deserve.
Yeah. So funny stuff. But yeah. And then Pro V1X golf ball. He's pretty almost a titleist guy all the way through, with exception of the putter. But yeah, pretty awesome equipment for a U.S. Open victory.
Yeah, just like say a couple of gems in there, like say the putter and the wedge, which the wedge it was ridiculous how good he was around the greens.
Yeah,
so congrats to him. And like say another major's in the books. And now that we start talking about it a little bit more, it may fall into that closer to high C rate. As I started talking about it, I was like, it was good. And like, I still want to play LACC. But you're right. It lacked a little something, whether that was the USA being soft and the LACC members having a big influence on maybe course setup. They didn't want their course to get baked out, or allegedly buying up half of the tickets so that the crowd stayed small.
Yeah.
I don't know. A couple of different things could be right all at the same time. So, I don't know. Any good words from you? You're done with junior camps, which makes your life a little bit less hectic.
Yeah. It was awesome. I love helping grow the game. I try to give back. It's, you know, I
think give back. Grow the game is such an overutilized.
So give back to the game.
Yes, give back to the game. There you go.
And that's
I like that better. I think that's what you're doing.
Yeah, because I don't have to go and do junior camps. It's a very stressful thing. Anybody that's been a golf pro, junior camps happen, and it's kind of like this necessary evil that occurs, and you're like, okay, I'm doing it, but it hurts now. But
it hurts real bad.
It hurts really bad when they take swing and they knock your shin with a 9-iron.
Yeah, or you're out picking balls and they decide to clip you in the hip.
Oh, that happened. That happened. So, but anyways, I've been doing it for 8 years now, and you know, I do connect with a lot of the junior golfers, and it's really cool to see their games grow and see what kind of players they are. And you know, when you see them every day for 5 days and you help them with their game, it's pretty cool to see the impact you can have on junior golfers. And so it's a lot of fun in that sense. And I like to give back.
Yes. So you're a good man, for doing that. Like I said, I've done my fair share of junior golf stuff, as well. And it's definitely not easy. But it can be rewarding, right? You're introducing some people, some you're introducing just them to the game, that we obviously love. So that's, I think, the best part is, I actually had a conversation with, playing with a buddy of mine this afternoon, and we were talking about a friend of his who actually plays with us, every once in a while. But I guess he was like just a stud quarterback, and then when he got into high school, his grandpa made him play golf. And they were talking about, now they talk about it and they're like, man, your grandpa was a genius. He did you right. I hear that a lot from a lot of my friends or people that I meet that didn't play golf growing up, right? They're like, man, I wish I would have played more growing up, because now they're an addict, and they don't have the background to necessarily be a better golfer. So,
Love to
but
get.
yeah, I think that's all we got. Thanks for listening. I was less than energetic today. Be back next week. Well, yeah, I don't think I have 36 planned before next episode. But yeah, we appreciate you, and would be great if you guys would leave us a rating and review. And until next time, we are out.